exactly as the queen cries when the king leaves his body. However, the disciple and spiritual master are never separated, because the spiritual master always keeps company with the disciple as long as the disciple strictly follows the instructions of the spiritual master. This is called the association of vani, words. Physical presence is called vapu. As long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master, and when the spiritual master is no longer physically existing, the disciple should serve the instructions of the spiritual master. So a little history in ISKCON. Of course, ISKCON was started by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, and we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the founding of ISKCON right now. So when Prabhupada was present, we were all completely, even externally, dependent upon Prabhupada's interactions with us. I mean, Prabhupada would be sending out there thousands of letters that Srila Prabhupada wrote. So Srila Prabhupada would be in constant contact with the devotees around the world, and we'd write him for all sorts of different things. I mean, not just like spiritual things, but, you know, just about everything. He was like a father to everybody. So we would write him, I mean, for example, I wrote him whenever I did anything that I thought was nice, like had books distributed, or we were preaching in a temple, or whatever, you know, I would just write Prabhupada and say, you know, Prabhupada, I'm doing this, and Prabhupada would give back, write back with some instruction. Like there's one interesting instruction Prabhupada gave me. I was working in South America, in Venezuela. I was the temple president, and I wrote Prabhupada, you know, what was going on. And then Prabhupada wrote back, you know, he's very pleased with the book distribution, and I should dedicate my life to making sure everybody has his books in their homes. And then Prabhupada said something very interesting. He said, you should cooperate with Sri Nandananda Maharaj, because Sri Nandananda Maharaj was the GBC at that time. So nowadays, this is just a side issue. Nowadays, Sri Nandananda Maharaj is a little controversial in ISKCON. So then when the other GBC members asked me, you know, why are you supporting him? I said, it's Prabhupada's instruction. I have it in writing. It's actually one of the letters that's in the database. So I have it in writing. And they said, well, that instruction would change. I said, no, the instruction is there, so I have to follow it. And so they get very frustrated with me. Anyway, so that's another issue. So practically speaking, we would just like, whatever letter Prabhupada was written to any temple in ISKCON, we'd hear about the letter, they'd call us up on the phone, and anything Prabhupada said, we would do immediately. I mean, one time, Prabhupada said something very interesting. He said, all the devotees should go on Sankirtan, and they should eat just once a day, either in the morning or in the evening, but that's it. No more eating other than that. And they should just close the doors of the temple and go on Sankirtan. So immediately everybody started doing that, and people started getting, you know, really like spaced out and everything, because they were only eating once a day and trying to eat a lot once a day. And then Prabhupada, of course, changed it. And then, I mean, then there was this whole thing about the wigs. There's many examples about this. Like one devotee went to Prabhupada and complained that devotees were wearing wigs on Sankirtan. And then Prabhupada, I said, no, how can they wear wigs? It's the hippies coming again. Then Ramaswara went to Prabhupada and said, this way our book distribution is going to drop dramatically. You know, they're dressed like gentlemen, and the wigs aren't like hippie wigs, even though they were long wigs, because everyone there, including gentlemen, used to have long wigs or long hair. So then Prabhupada said, all right, now I understand. He changed that instruction. So we were, you know, just every word that Prabhupada gave us, or every instruction that Prabhupada gave us, we were just like changing things from one thing to another. It's like being in a ship and the captain, you know, of course that description is given in the Bhagavatam, that the favorable winds of the Vedic literatures and the spiritual master is the captain of the boat that crosses the ocean of material existence. So it was like that with Prabhupada. I mean, always, every day, you know, what is Prabhupada doing? Especially in the last few years when Prabhupada was getting sick, there was actually a lot of news. You know, how does Prabhupada feel today? What do the devotees say? You know, do they think he's going to recover? What medicine is they giving? Are they giving him? What does the astrologers say? I mean, all these things were just like complete Prabhupada consciousness in the Krishna consciousness movement. And then Prabhupada left, of course, in 1977, November on this day in 1977. And then it was just like, we couldn't believe it. Nobody thought that Prabhupada was going to leave the planet. You know, this is Prabhupada getting sick and getting close to death. It was like a pastime. It was just like a pastime trying to bring out some emotions. We thought, oh, Prabhupada's just doing this, or Krishna's just doing this to bring out some specific emotions of dedication to Prabhupada. But then all of a sudden, we were informed, it was early in the morning, I was in Los Angeles, we were informed that Prabhupada had left the night before, and the temple president was Ramaswar at that time. He told me to lock all the doors of the temple and not let anyone out before we made the announcement. And then as soon as we made the announcement, people basically dropped to the floor. And just like being described here in Srila Prabhupada's purport, the devotees were just like crying. I mean, the whole day, basically, and for a week maybe, the devotees were just like in a state of trauma from it, because they couldn't believe it. I mean, the person who they dedicated their whole life to was now gone from this world. And so it was very hard for many devotees to make the transition, because according to the sociology of religion, there's different religious societies. There's different stages in the development of a religion. The first stage is called the charismatic phase. And the charismatic phase is when you have a charismatic leader like Srila Prabhupada. He was definitely charismatic. I mean, completely spiritual. I mean, sometimes you find material people who are charismatic too. But Prabhupada was charismatic, completely spiritual, powerful, and everything like that. And so the devotees are dependent upon that outward charisma of the person. And generally, when the charismatic figure disappears, then there is havoc. And the Prabhupada points that out. Points it out actually here in the next purport. I'll read the next purport in translation. So the queen is crying out, "O best of kings," remember the king represents the spiritual master, the queen represents the disciple. So she's crying out, "O best of kings, please get up, get up. See this world surrounded by water and infested by rogues and so-called kings. This world is very much afraid, and it is your duty to protect her." And Srila Prabhupada states here, "When an acharya comes following the superior orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or his representative, he establishes the principles of religion as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita. Religion means abiding by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Religious principles begin from time when one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the acharya's duty to spread a bona fide religious system and induce everyone to bow down before the Supreme Lord. One executes the religious principles by rendering devotional service, specifically the 9 items like hearing, chanting, and remembering. Unfortunately, when the acharya disappears, rogues and non-devotees take advantage and immediately begin to introduce unauthorized principles in the name of so-called swamis, yogis, philanthropists, welfare workers, and so on. Actually, human life is meant for executing the orders of the Supreme Lord, and this is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Manmana, Bhavamat Bhakto, Matyajivam, Namaskuru, Mamavaishasi, Twayavam, Admanam, Matparayanam. Engage your mind always in thinking of me and become my devotee. Offer obeisances and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. The main business of human society is to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times, to become his devotees, to worship the Supreme Lord, and to bow down before him. The acharya, the authorized representative of the Supreme Lord, establishes these principles, but when he disappears, things once again become disordered. The perfect disciples of the acharya try to relieve the situation by sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master. At the present moment, practically the whole world is afraid of rogues and non-devotees. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is started to save the world from irreligious principles. Everyone should cooperate with this movement in order to bring about actual peace and happiness in the world. So because Prabhupada had a worldwide movement, he wasn't physically present at every place, And the traditional system is the acharya actually just stays in one place, and he has his particular ashram so he can supervise things. So even before Prabhupada disappeared, we had rogues and rascals doing different things. I mean, there was one story many, many years ago that probably have not heard about this before, but in the New York temple, there was a leader who was actually quite charismatic. His name was Bali Mardan. And what happened is that he was the leader of the temple. The temple was doing very, very well in Krishna consciousness, and he was a sannyasi. So what happened was that he started preaching to this lady who told him and told all the devotees that she was the heiress of the Toyota fortune. Teshi Toyota was her name or something like that. And so he was preaching to her, and she was like 20 years older than him or something like that, or at least 15 years older than him. And one thing led to another, and there was a fall down because he was alone with a woman. Actually, that different devotees like Chanaka Pandit and the Vedic literature say that one should not be alone with a woman who is not one's wife. Balavan Indriya Grama Vidwan Ivahi Karshati. The senses are very strong. So anyway, so eventually he succumbed to this, and he fell down from sannyasa order of life, got married to this woman. It turned out, of course, that she wasn't the heiress to the Toyota fortune, because Toyota is a public corporation. It's not owned by any one particular person. Of course, there may be some people who have a lot of stocks in it. So, and, you know, Prabhupada, just tolerating the whole thing, actually performed their marriage sacrifice, and gave... gave her initiation. And so after that happened, so many crazy things started happening in the temple that the devotees started to claim that he was he had renounced his sannyas as a higher principle, so the movement would have a lot of money from the Toyota Motor Company or something like that. I mean, it was crazy, craziness. I remember those days. It was really crazy. And then she was doing things like offering eggs to the deities, to Radha Govindaji in New York. And the devotees, they were just like blind, not seeing all this was going on. You know, finally, word reached Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had to stop it. So the point is that even when Prabhupada wasn't physically present at a place, you know, rogues and rascals came out. And, you know, Bali Mardan was a sincere devotee, but he became enamored by Krishna's external energy. Adanam Janam Sundarim, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, or Queen Kunti also says the same thing, that Janmaishvarya Shutasya Shibir Enamana Daupuman. The people get bewildered by these things. Anyway, so this happened even when Prabhupada was on the planet. And then, when Prabhupada left the planet, we had many devotees who were, let's say, sincere devotees. I'm not saying they weren't sincere, but because they succumbed to one of the sources of anarthas, which is the byproducts of bhakti, they committed so many horrible activities in our movement, and eventually many of them fell down. In fact, the majority of them fell down from devotional service. So we see this actually happen, and basically people were very confused. I mean, Europe, things were really a mess for a while, after one of the main acharyas left, that was Hari Kesh. You remember that? You came after that time. And so one of the main acharyas, you know, just like left, and actually started to criticize Prabhupada, but now he's coming back. I mean, these are sincere devotees. We had another person, and I won't mention his name, who got so enamored with the power he had, he just did so many crazy things. He was shooting guns from the Vyasa Sun. You know, just like, boom, 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 like that. You know, just like, Maya really just like devastated so many devotees. Another leader started a whole marijuana movement. You know, if you smoke marijuana, you can concentrate in the holy names and give your emotions to Krishna better. And he had tapes. That time there weren't any CDs. He had tapes out of him chanting in ecstasy under the influence of marijuana and LSD. And so he started another movement, and devotees would just listen to it and think, this is, wow, Guru Maharaj is in ecstasy. So he had a lot of craziness happening. And it was exactly as Prabhupada said, that the rogues and rascals come out. And the only reason our movement survived those years, that's called the post-charismatic phase. In the post-charismatic phase, you have people who try to imitate the Acharya. In other words, they think, well, we can become gurus just like Srila Prabhupada. And they thought that they were absolute on the same platform as Srila Prabhupada without recognizing their subordinate position. You know, because it's very much enamoring to be surrounded by followers, you know, women, followers, wealth. All these things were put in people's hands. You know, imagine like ladies, they come to you and they say, oh, your lotus feet are so wonderful. And you're only 25 years old or 28 or 30 years old. And this young girl, you know, a young attractive girl comes up and says, oh, your lotus feet, Guru Maharaj. And then, you know, the money, Guru Daksha and everything like that. So people weren't mature. That's another problem, is that devotees were generally around 28, 29, 30. I mean, I took sannyasa like at 29 or something. And that's pretty young. And of course, when I became a guru, I wasn't that young. I was 35 or something. But that's pretty young too. You know, so even when I became a guru, this is like, of course, I didn't do anything too crazy. But I would, anyway, I would, you know, we have these daily guru pujas or something like that, which is crazy. Crazy. Even after Prabhupada left, there were 11 people who were appointed, thought they were appointed as gurus. Actually, Prabhupada wanted the GBC to become more powerful and to deal with the matter of guruship. But they superseded the authority of the GBC, became more powerful than the GBC. And so whenever there was a meeting of these gurus, they all had to have their own vyasasans in the temple room. So you had a temple room filled with 11 vyasasans and 11 pujaris doing the guru puja simultaneously. And cool. It wasn't cool. Because I remember in Miami, I was a temple president in Miami, and it was so crazy. I left when they had meetings. Because we had a big facility in Miami. We had a hotel in Miami. We owned it at that time. And so whenever they had the meetings, I just decided to leave town, even though I was the temple president. I didn't want anything to do with it. So we had 11 vyasasans and 11 pujaris, and the temple room was roughly twice or three times the size of this living room here. So that there was basically no room for the devotees other than the pujaris and the gurus. It was wild. It was wild. And you know, anyway, I'm not going to tell all the stories because some of the people may listen to this later on. So, our movement survived because we actually had a revolution, like a coup, where there was a 50-man committee. We would be meeting every week or two in this temple called Tawako, New Jersey, to decide how to throw out the gurus. Or to have a revolution or to change the situation somehow or other. Not exactly to get rid of them, but just like to bring them down to earth. And so we were having regular meetings in this place called Tawako, New Jersey, where we discussing strategy, and eventually a 50-man committee was formed, and the 50-man committee reconstituted the GBC. And the GBC again reasserted its authority.
Over the 80s.
That was in the 80s, yeah. That was in the 80s. Yeah, obviously, because Prabhupada left in 77, so it took a few years. And then even after that, we had many gurus having problems, even after that particular point. So, but then now, because we have a strong GBC, and the GBC, you know, it's not perfect, but we cooperate with the GBC, which is the instruction of Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples didn't follow, and as a result, the Gaudiya Math is like all these different Gaudiya Maths all over the place. There is not a Gaudiya Math. There are many Gaudiya Maths. And some of the court cases they had, they're still going on to this day for the different properties. And they were fighting. They had acharyas fall down and everything like that. And it was a big mess. But they never formed the GBC, whereas we focused on Prabhupada's instruction to have the GBC as the ultimate managing authority of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So ISKCON has remained together, and now we're even stronger than before, because we've gone through this period of stress where everything fell apart, but we took shelter of Prabhupada's instruction and brought everything back together. So now things are very strong. I mean, ISKCON is really an amazing organization now. People are working together. There's no like zonal acharyas like there used to be. It's just, you know, it's a very nice movement. It's not separate movements with different acharyas. So anyway, it took some time, and now it's working. But what Prabhupada said happened. And so, of course, according to sociology, this generally does happen in religious societies. There's charismatic phase, post-charismatic phase, and then after that, you have the phase where the charisma is invested in the organization. And that's the stage, and the organization and the founder acharya, too. And that's the stage where you have stability. And so we're entering that particular stage right now. We're in that stage. And ISKCON is actually quite stable by Prabhupada's mercy. And so we're going to continue reading the next verse. The most obedient wife thus fell down at the feet of her dead husband and began to cry pitifully in that solitary forest. Thus the tears rolled down from her eyes. Prabhupada says, just as a devoted wife becomes afflicted at the passing of her husband, when the spiritual master passes away, the disciple becomes similarly bereaved. And I'm going to read sections because we don't have a lot of time. Prabhupada talks, he said, about a devotee's wife. He says, indicates a devotee's wife must be prepared to act in such a way, talking about the sati rite. But it's not that we have sati rites in ISKCON. Nowadays, the wife should remain faithful to the husband and not get married again, just serve Prabhupada's mission. Similarly, a devoted disciple, the spiritual master, would rather die with the spiritual master. Whoops, what happened here? A devoted disciple, the spiritual master, would rather die with the spiritual master than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. So that's the determination. That when the spiritual master passes away, that you have two choices. One, to go along with the spiritual master's mission, or the other one is to die. That is the devoted disciple. So the devotion of the disciple was actually tested at that particular point. It's like Prabhupada initiated 5,000 people. But how many of these people are still within ISKCON, functioning, you know, chanting and following the principles and serving ISKCON? Maybe a few hundred at this particular point. And of course, I'm not including those who passed away already. We had quite a few pass away. So it's actually a test of a disciple's dedication. Because otherwise, one is just following out of sentimentality. You know, one is just serving the Bapu, but not actually understanding the orders of the Guru, then it's just very sentimental, and it will not last. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down on this earth to establish the principles of religion, so his representative, the spiritual master, also comes to reestablish religious principles. It is the duty of the disciples to take charge of the mission of the spiritual master and execute it properly. Otherwise, the disciples should decide to die along with the spiritual master. These are very heavy words. In other words, to execute the will of the spiritual master, the disciple should be prepared to lay down his life and abandon all personal considerations. So that was the impetus for me to take sannyas. And there's other interesting instructions here. That what happens is after, read part of the purport, when one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, his resolution is tantamount, that means it's exactly the same, to see in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As explained before, this means meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the instructions of the spiritual master. What's this? Oh. This thing keeps jumping. Here we go. This is technically called Vani Seva. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states in his Bhagavad Gita commentary on the verse Vyavasayatmika Bhutir, a.k.a. Hakur Anandara, that one should serve the words of the spiritual master, the disciple must stick to whatever the spiritual master orders. Simply by following in that line, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's see. I'm taking more of the purport here. If one sticks to the principles enunciated by the spiritual master, somehow or other, he is in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Lord is in the heart, he can advise a sincere disciple from within. In conclusion, if a disciple, is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapu. This is the only secret of success in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush of Vrindavan, while at the same time engaging in sense gratification, if one sticks to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. Very interesting. Okay, so what happens in this particular discussion is that, in this particular part of the Bhagavatam, that actually the Super Soul appears in front of the Queen. And Super Soul says, you know, I'm your old friend, you should recognize me. And so Prabhupada comments that when one actually follows the order of the spiritual master, after the spiritual master leaves the planet, the Super Soul actually manifests himself in front of someone. And of course, we understand the spiritual master's position is that the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the Super Soul. The Super Soul is called the Chaita Guru, the Guru in the heart. And right now, we're not really hearing what the Guru in the heart is saying. It's an interesting experience we have with many Christians. Many Christians say, you know, Jesus is in my heart and he's giving me instructions. And when I talk to them, I say, is Jesus giving you instruction to go to the bar, to eat meat and everything like that? And they say, yes. He's saying it's all right in their heart. So because we have these tendencies of conditioned souls, you know, we make mistakes, we're in illusion, all these other things. Therefore, we misinterpret our mind's rantings and ravings for the Super Soul telling us what to do. I mean, you see this even with devotees in our movement. Of course, they don't eat meat or do any of these other things. But they just say, you know, Krishna's telling me to do this. You hear this all the time. You know, Krishna wants me to do this. And you just ask, how do you know Krishna wants you to do this? So therefore, we need external association. Of course, the spiritual master is present. If one is fully dedicated to the mission of the spiritual master, then you're able to communicate directly with the Super Soul. However, most people are not fully dedicated to the mission of the spiritual master, so therefore, they're hearing their mind 90% of the time, the Super Soul maybe 10% of the time, if they're lucky. So therefore, for most of us, that means we take shelter, when the spiritual master is not present, of other Vaishnavas. And as Prabhupada comments in the Upadeshamrita, in this famous verse, the Dati Pratigurnati Guyama Kyati Prichati, we reveal our minds to more advanced Vaishnavas and we take advice from more advanced Vaishnavas. And in this way, we can actually appreciate the presence of the Super Soul, even if the spiritual master is not present, even if Srila Prabhupada is not present. So that must be there. It's not that we are all talking directly to the Super Soul as Queen Vidarbhi is able to do here. So that's the discussion of this part of the Bhagavatam. And this part of the Bhagavatam is what we read all the time right after Srila Prabhupada left the planet. We were talking about these things. So now, at this particular juncture, and we'll, of course we'll have Guru Puja for Srila Prabhupada later, we'll have Pushpanjali for Srila Prabhupada in the palace, and we'll hear offerings from some of my god brothers and other exalted personalities, and I'll make another offering a little later. But what I want to do is give you all an opportunity to say your own realizations and dedication to Srila Prabhupada. Who wants to start first?
I'll go.
Okay, you go.
Yes, I didn't meet Srila Prabhupada because I was in Rabon. but I think I have met him through to register through yourself and the devotees.
Mm.
And it's for me, I think it's very simply, he's given us, and I take it down to three, so he's given us the direction where to go, which is Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
How to do it with this support of the organization, which is worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting. You can pick a country, go and there's ISKCON, pretty much. Same goal, same way, you do Mangalarti the same way. It's one family, it's worldwide. And he said, why? You know, you need to get Krishna, because that's the whole dedication of your life. This is what you need to do to reach Krishna. This is the reason you are born as human and not as a dog. So, I think the biggest thing for me, Prabhupada, is he's given us this family to go together with. You're not out there on your own trying to get somewhere. You're not, you know, how do I get there? What do I do? Is this right or wrong? Take your shelter. There's other devotees who we would walk together to go there. And also, he's made it, for me personally, with my family, I see he's made it a happy organization.
Mm.
All these festivals, and we get involved, we, especially in Sydney, my experience is there's a festival nearly every month or more where you fully engage, you are either cooking, you cleaning, or you're doing something, or you're painting, or you're building something, or you're thinking, how are you going to do? You always engage with other devotees, trying to serve Srila Prabhupada and his movement, and it's great. I mean, we make cakes for Radha Gopinath, and weeks go by where we're thinking, how are we going to do this? And you know, the head progeny will call and say, we need two cakes this big and it needs to be this color.
Wow.
Because the deity blessing is so and so. And you go, how are we going to do that? Anyway, so you pray to the Prabhupada, and somehow or the other, it happens. And then you feel excited and you start again. And again. And
wow.
So for me, it's just, as I said, there's this goal to get to Krishna. But also, it's not just mundane, you sit in one place and you know, you hope you get there. There's the festivals, there's chanting. And it's hard to just sit down and chant, I guess, 54 hours. But you do a bit and then get involved in service.
Hmm.
So I see him making this goal, but he's also given the path and the family to get there. So for me, that's a big, big thing. And I hope I can continue doing and serve this movement.
That's nice. Okay, who's next? You're next. All right.
Yeah, it's a mere fight for the individual conversations. So I just came from the village and I live in the with the devotees in the village. So devotees have given me the Science of Self-Realization book for me to study. Then I keep the study book and I was studying about the different relations regarding one heart surgeon. They do the, you know, surgery, more than 2000, and he's saying how the soul, they have the out-of-body experience, and how the soul is going up, and how the, you know, when one is dying, then how the light is going, you know, finish, like, going like down from the body, finishing. So, I was reading and I was understanding, you know, like, it is very horrible given what is dying and light consciousness is coming out from the eye. Then whenever I get chance to discuss with devotees and discuss about the same story, how it happens in the medical science, doctor is writing about this. So then devotees say, you know, this is the real, you know, understanding, this is happening of all doctors and the realizations. When the patient is going to be die, especially at the time of heart surgery. So then again, one devotee is writing about, I read sometime Bhagavatam 1-2 Sloka. Then one doctor devotee came to live with us and he's saying, do you know the things that I am studying in my college, it all about how the child's, you know, child's getting grow in the stomach,
yeah, the womb,
in the pregnancy, and how they develop, how many days it take, everything they have taken from the Bhagavatam. Then I get more like faith in really the things that I am studying is really true and it is good to study then slowly, slowly, I used to read Bhagavad Gita, and then my devotees say, you know, you should distribute Bhagavad Gita in Gita Marathon. So I'm very enthusiastic at the time of Gita Marathon. And like literally at that time, I'm traveling in the bus. So when I sit in the bus, you know, first seat, then the next someone sit behind me, and I say, you know, take Bhagavad Gita. I only call this man, so I don't have any meditation. Then he's like, I don't have money. I said, don't worry, just wait. Give your address. I will come to your house and then you pay.
Oh my God.
And this happens many times. I take the address after a week.
And you go to their home and you get their money.
Yeah.
And it works? They actually pay the money?
Yeah, they pay. And they're very happy.
It works in India.
Yeah, in India, I don't think that would work otherwise.
So, one day, what happened, there's a my like, counselor, his name is Dr. Prabhuji. He said some work to me, okay, you do this. And I could not read and I went to my college. So, he's very angry, you know, I said to Prabhupada, he didn't do. At that time, I always carried my Bhagavad Gita in my backpack, and whenever I travel. So near to hospital, I distributed one English Bhagavad Gita, and I back to house. Then as I approached, I distributed one Bhagavad Gita. He forget everything, and he's very happy. Is it nice? And he, that is really interesting. Like, you know, I'm from the village. I never know English, anything from a rural area. Somehow the determination, confidence, and every good qualities can build inside the devotees. That really, whenever I, you know, give Bhagavad Gita, then I speak little English. And you always say, see, you really just speak English. So, devotees really always appreciate me. And really, Prabhupada, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is very powerful. Even I read many times about all the, even they have written one thing in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita. And then I repeat, they have written about, you know, philosophy without, you know, that is speculation, and
philosophy without religion is mental speculation.
Then, in the proper retainer, there is many Bhagavad Gita in the market, but this Bhagavad Gita is very special, and because of, you know, the authenticity and the parampara thing. Then the same words I repeat in the time of distribution. So, people appreciate, and they say, really, it's very nice. This is really happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. I see, you see many Bhagavad Gita in the market. There is no one is authentic. They just write about self. So people appreciate, and I distribute many books. And really, it's a way. Okay, I continue Krishna consciousness, and I learn, and then I gradually get in touch with devotees, and I even whenever, like, I sometime in a dream I'm thinking about what could I do, how it happens, then suddenly I get some solutions. Even like whenever I get any problem and I read Bhagavad Gita and see, really, like, it's solved.
It's nice.
So I try to, at least even now it's little hectic time. At that time I was a student, so I study much, and free time. But now still I'm trying hard to read the Prabhupada books and to get more into the movement and to preach as many other students. Even at that time I was very enthusiastic in the book distribution. Unfortunately now I'm just not distributing more books. So in this marathon I will try hard to distribute more and more books.
That's nice, it'll please Prabhupada.
Yeah. So even there is in IIT, we have the preaching program, but still we need some good strategy for preaching to the students. So the students can accept Krishna consciousness. Like that, yesterday I was discussing that, like, probably, okay, you know, the things, the students, if we give the same thing, they need something change. If we give some varieties, then they can help easily. Like yesterday in the conversation in the Govardhan Parikrama, we have, like, you know, the market companies, they check market research, what is good, and how they will accept. So that is require a good research, especially like, you know, this, like for us, I'm the students and I know all the educational technique. And even many devotee friends, they are still they are working in big companies. So they already use a technique for the company. They can also use for the devotional service. So that would be nice. Even I plan to do the project so the people can, you know, get more benefit, because many cheaters is there. People get cheated. So even there is a need of, you know, proper books, they should read and they should analyze. They should make a happy life.
Very nice. Okay, very good. Okay, Gokulendra.
So, from the time when you told us that we should speak something about Srila Prabhupada, I began to think then what I could say. I said that it would be nice that you say some realization. So, as I was thinking about that, then I relish the most this first day in Krishna consciousness. In a special way, because I then met Prabhupada, as Nadeep said, also had this feeling that I'm meeting a live person. It's not somebody who is now dead, and we like can hear about him, we can read about him. So when I came, I read two books of Srila Prabhupada. I read some books before, then I came and read maybe one book. Then I immediately wanted to know who is this person who is writing these books, because books were amazing. And it's, great revolution in my life. I changed so fast. People around me, they were like amazed. How like 1 week, you are like, and people couldn't believe, like, oh, I know him, like, like now he's into this, you know, and then he will speak about it. Because I used to philosophize a lot, and then I would never have like a serious audience and the people to talk with. I mean, then I understood after the books that not so many people like that they want to know about absolute truth, things like that. So I was very happy I found some people there. They are into philosophy, like you can speak with them all day if you want. So, like that. So I wanted to know about this person who's writing this book. So I took this Lamrit and Bhagavad Gita. I was very attracted to Bhagavad Gita also, because the voice was saying this is 5,000 years old scripture. I was amazed. How is that possible? It's not Croatia, you have this 5,000 and such a person walking on the surface on the earth. I mean, I understood that after I was reading the biography. So I think I read, like, it was kind of fortunate that I had my hand in some kind of, how you call this?
Cast.
Hurt. Not cast, but something like that.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of time, and I thought I read, like, Lil Amrit in maybe 2 days, like that. And I was so amazed by this person. At one point I just started to, I was reading, I was crying. I couldn't believe that such a person can exist. That's still, because we were like young and we would do all kind of nonsense and anything, but always I felt from inside that I should like dedicate my life to good. I mean, we were always tempted by evil things around us. So many like that, and then you even they sold like good things to people. But and then I tried to go to some classes they were organized by the church in the school, like that, and couldn't understand practically. Like, what's the point? Actually, Prabhupada explained to me what is Jesus Christ. Actually, it didn't even clear, you know, like what was happening here. Always like the movies about the Christ and so on. And he was kind of my inspiration. So like, I like his especially his courage and dedication, like that. It was amazing how he, what's giving him the power. And Prabhupada reminded me of this person.
Mm.
So I was very happy so I can meet like modern Christ and, you know, like follow him. Like there is somebody like, I mean, you can know actually who is Christ in that.
Mm.
Just by even being born in Christian country. Like I understood that the Christians, that I went like for 2 years, we had it in school, like it was like a subject.
Mm.
So practically I had it maybe every day, I don't know.
Mm.
So I was trying to learn about Christ, and supposedly, I mean, I was like born in the tradition. Like, didn't learn much at home. Mm. You would only see some films on the video, especially during Christmas. And then I understood then after, to, you know, studying Prabhupada's books and talking with devotees, like that Christians, they worship Christ like God.
Mm.
You can never understand these things. And Prabhupada, on the other side, he was conveying the message so clearly.
Mm.
He will make a high, like, philosophical concept so easy and approachable.
Mm.
So I also, I mean, understood that this person is a, you know, yeah, kind of a Christ type of person, mm. traveling around and spending the mission of God. And for the first time, it's clear, like that. So that stays with me for the, like, my life till this moment.
Mm.
And it's, yeah, so when I was thinking about this realization about Prabhupada, this is my, like, one of the most cherished realization and I mean, sentiments that I have. And I remember this moment, I was hearing this voice, so happy that such a person exists, because I kind of quitted thought that somebody can help me. I was kind of searching, but not so many people around were being able to explain. I was going to first that Christian classes in school, then teenage age kind of confuses you even more. You do this, that, everything. But still I was trying to read books, going to some other kind of spiritual organizations, but always had this feeling that something is missing. And Prabhupada gave it so fast, like everything was so clear. Like in 1 week, I started to follow principles. Even my girlfriend said, I'm sorry. You know, so I said, Rosa, I mean, I'm sorry, I have to follow this. It's
like, oh my God.
Because, I mean, Prabhupada is, as you were saying, such a powerful person. Like, he convinced me in, like, 3 days, practically, that, you know, like, your life is nonsense, and this is a life of a human being, so you're supposedly a human being, okay, I am. So if you're a human being, you follow these four principles, like that, so you can use your life nicely, like, for God realization. I mean, the girlfriend was also kind of spiritual, and she was chanting and was trying to, but this one principle that she couldn't, like, it was too much for her, so, like, she left me. And then, in that situation, I found it actually nice, have more time to think more deeply about this whole thing that Prabhupada is presenting. Came to temple and then was attracted by Brahmacharya, like that, and then the rest is a history. Then, next thing I just want to discuss shortly, that now recently, and you're also stressing this a lot, that this position of Prabhupada as preeminent Acharya, that this clear understanding of his position means a lot to everybody, and I'm very thankful that is around now, it is explained more and more, because then through this understanding of his position and what he did, we can develop gratefulness also to him. And that is, like he said, it's, you can repay. I mean, so personally, I try not to lose this gratefulness. Nowadays, ISKCON is so big, and it's so easy to go into your routine and kind of Prabhupada is not physically present. It's kind of there's this danger of forgetting Prabhupada. So it's very important to create this Prabhupada consciousness, as you have had. I was, when you were explaining in the beginning how you were so Prabhupada conscious, I was a little envious. Like, it was so nice. I mean, and also you said like how you were ready to like how you say fulfill his every instruction. Like, nowadays I see also that gurus, I mean, I feel also from my side with relationship with you that you must use, you have to be very sensitive to this side. Pick the words, you know, like how to, you know, convince him maybe to, you know, go in this direction. This could be, well, like, with my example, maybe, now I don't know what will happen. Then you're speaking about some extra surrender like that. So I immediately start to calculate, but I have this and this, and we speak about already about this, and then maybe he will suggest this. But I mean, you were all so dedicated. It's amazing. Like, I was trying to fit myself in this position. Kind of, what is the word? It's like, yeah, it's incomprehensible.
Frightening.
For me. Frightening in one sense, because we are kind of different generation.
Yeah.
It's like that. I don't want to say that there are no personalities like Prabhupada nowadays, our moments, but in another sense, there will be never somebody like
that. That's right. Yeah.
As well, and it is that we shouldn't imitate Prabhupada. As well, we give our. It's not. It doesn't matter that we are the best guru, best disciple. That important is that we give our level best. So I got a lot of inspiration from this dedication story, for my personal level best dedication, whatever I can offer, like that. Yeah, so I'm gonna end on this point. Thank you very much for giving us a chance to express our feelings all from our sensations.
That's nice. Haribol. Okay, so we'll put this on the internet. Okay, so
yeah, that was also that I felt pressure when I started recording. But it's good for my teaching career.